Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
I'm excited for today's discussion.
I am very excited as well. But before we do, I would like to tell you something that I think will excite you even more.
Even more.
You like to compliment me about some of my influence on you. And so I too am looking for opportunities to repay that favor. And so there have been a few decisions I've made that have been directly influenced by you. You ready for these?
Wow. I'm like trying to think what they could be about.
They're about spending money.
Were you hot and in a hurry?
No, but they involve me like separating with my money. Yeah.
Money and ice. So, what you bought?
Well,
what you buy?
With the American Express Platinum cards, there's all these different credits you can get. And this is part of our, you know, Race to a Million Points annual exercise. And so one of the credits was $50 at Saks Fifth Avenue every 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, what the hell do I buy at Saks? Like, you know, a t-shirt is $90. It's ridiculous. But then when we were in Austria, and I'm going to try to say this without sounding too weird, we did a combined load of laundry and I saw the socks that you and Greg have, the Bombas. Is that what they're called?
Balegas.
Well, I thought they
Bombas
were...
Bombas is a different sock brand. I'm not a big fan of Bombas for what it's worth.
Oh, well, I thought they were Bombas. Oh. And so I went and bought three pairs of them for $50 with my credit. And I'm like, these are so bougie and nice. And Maggie would be so proud of me. And I have never spent what ended up being $15 per pair of socks. So even though I got the wrong brand, it was inspired by you.
I like it. Well, for anyone who's listening, Balega is my current, like for running socks. It's mm-hmm. Balega. They're amazing. Bombas are okay. They don't hold up long term super well.
Well, they're the exact same cut. They have like the little ankle thing, and that's why I thought they were the same. So there are some more things that I'm using with my credits.
What else? I just got
the American Express Business Platinum, which has a $400 a year credit at Dell, which is $200 every 6 months. And so I am going to buy a new, very large monitor inspired by your monitor purchase like 18 months ago.
I was wondering, when I saw that credit, I was like, I won't use that. I use Macs and I don't need a computer. I didn't even think about the monitors.
I know. Yeah. I read it on a blog. And then the next thing I'm going to buy are those headphones that you're wearing.
Oh, I love my headphones. Where are you going to... Is this related to a credit you're getting or
no,
are you just going to get them?
They sell them at Dell and I'm going to buy those.
I love them.
I know. You talk about them all the time. And
I'm like turning my head sideways.
More frequently. So all of these things I'm spending money on just to copy you. I'm so inspired.
You're going to love your Bose headphones.
I know.
I wrote a whole blog post like over a year ago about how these headphones make me a better parent because I'm able to sounds bad when it said this way. You got to read the post. But I'm able to like tune things out and like dull the sound of some things in my house, which can sometimes be loud.
Well, I look forward to telling you my experience with them.
They're like meditative. You're going to love them. Sometimes I just sit. I don't even have anything playing on them and I don't even have the noise cancellation turn on. I just sit working with them and they kind of like create a like noise vacuum. They're really, really lovely. Oh, and you'll start wearing them to record so we can be twinning.
Yeah, I'm going to get them exciting. In black, though.
Yeah, I would just mean, you know, generally having like, you know, big over-ear headphones on. That's exciting. Well, I'm glad I am, especially because you're currently employed. I'm glad I'm encouraging you to kind of splurge.
Well, I'm getting them for free.
I was going to say, your splurging is like with a credit, so it's not exactly splurging, but yeah. You're learning to enjoy some of the finer things in life, which yeah. I think is nice.
All right, Maggie. So what are we talking about today?
So today's topic, we are going to talk about something that has been on my mind a lot lately. I've always been into like time productivity and other things. We're going to talk about Parkinson's Law and the and what that is. We'll explain what it is and the impact of that on your time and your money. Before we do that, we want to read a couple of quick listener comments. We've been getting a lot of listener comments and emails, and I'm very sorry if we have not replied to you yet. Yesterday, I spent like an hour and a half catching up and replying to a bunch of texts and emails. And the shorter the message you send us, the faster we reply. Sometimes there's like a lot of in-depth questions and we just can't get to them quickly. So we do try and we will hopefully get back to everyone. But let me read a couple. One is a comment and one is a comment and a question. The first one, in the spirit of compliments, we get a lot. We've been getting a lot of complimentary comments from people, and it really, it just means a lot because we, Mike and I, put a lot of our own personal time and energy into this podcast, and we do not make any money off of it. And so it's nice to hear these compliments. This was from Mel. She said, I am new to FIRE and love your podcast. I'm actually from Australia, so not everything applies to me, but it's great to hear all of your experiences. I have listened to the Stock Market is Down episode, which is amazing timing as I have money to invest, but was not sure if I should put money in because obviously the stock market is very volatile currently. Now looking to dollar cost average, which we talked about on that episode. Thanks so much for all of your hard work with the podcast. I love the tips. They are very inspiring. It's also great to see Maggie actually experiencing FIRE in real time. Thanks, guys. Mel. There's just like such a sweet note. And I can really appreciate and relate to that note because I often talk about one of my biggest financial regrets is not learning and having the kind of understanding the simplicity of what investing could be on my own and understanding things like dollar cost averaging and index funds. And so I absolutely love teaching and inspiring other people to do that specifically. So,
and I love that she's in Australia, which I think means we need to have an Australia Friends on Fire meetup at some point. Should that be where our next business retreat is, Maggie?
That might be, yes.
So Mel, let us know where in Australia you are and maybe we'll come visit.
Love to. We better be careful with things like that. You know, we're going to get invitations.
Even better.
Which we'll accept. So
yes, yeah, any beautiful places in the world, if you want to invite me and Maggie, by all means.
Yeah. And Mel, if your life partner is a private plane charter and wants to fly us over there, you know, even better. Or we could get there ourselves. Okay, moving on. So here's what we'll do. I'm going to read the question. Mike's going to give a quick answer.
Very quick.
And then maybe we'll do a future episode on this. So I have a question. This is another listener question, by the way. I have a question that I don't know if you've addressed yet, at least on the episodes I've heard. Do either of you have long-term care insurance and or do you plan to get this when you're older? We have older relatives that have had great plans that pretty much took care of 80 to 90% of nursing care slash housing that was needed in later years. Care which is otherwise hugely expensive. But it seems like those kind of plans aren't offered anymore. The plans that are offered now have much more expensive premiums and very limited benefits. And I'm not sure they even make financial sense. You're both a little young, maybe. Maybe I think the maybe was in reference to
yeah, me. You're getting up there, Maggie.
Getting up there. You're both a little young to consider LTC insurance now, but I wonder if this is something you've budgeted for in your long-term financial plans and how you've thought about it. Thanks.
All right, very quick answer. I don't know a lot about long-term care, but I do know a lot about insurance. And the way insurance works, regardless of if it's for a TV or your long-term health, is that you pay more into it than the companies pay out. That's how they make money.
That's their goal. That's how they stay profitable.
Now, I did like a little bit of research prior to this because I saw this question, and you're right that very few companies offer long-term care anymore, probably because it was just too expensive. People are living longer. It's easier to keep people alive and therefore expensive. And so I don't know the numbers behind it, but it's going to be higher premiums, higher deductibles, caps on coverage, very specific requirements of what the payouts are. And so like all insurance, it is very dependent on your specific situation. And if you know you are going to have some issue or are likely to going to have some medical issue, which will require long-term care, and you can find a plan that you know will benefit you or has a greater likelihood of benefiting you, it could be a good deal. But for most people, I would think, like all insurance, that you're going to probably pay into it more than you're going to get back out. And there are other ways to plan for these costs.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And similar to what I sent back to them. And also, this could be a topic where we'll do a more detailed episode on in the future. But in the meantime, we wanted to give you some quick thoughts.
And if anybody's a long-term care expert and wants to give us some information or talk to us about it,
Yeah.
Please send that over and we will include it in the show.
Yeah, great point. Okay, so, and by the way, you can always figure out how to, you can always get in touch with us through our website at friendsonfire.org. So let's get into today's show topic. So this is a topic, we're going to talk about Parkinson's Law and we'll explain what it is. But this is a topic that has been on my mind a lot lately.
And it's on my mind all the time.
Why do you say that?
Because I have always been very disciplined
aware
and mindful of the way I spend my time. And I do a lot of, upon reflection, probably silly things to save little bits of time that over the long term save a lot of time. And it's just become a part of my normal behavior.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was going to say like aware when you were saying that. Like I have, one thing I have observed about you from afar, when I mean, I'm not, I say afar, like I'm not in your day to day.
Like across Atlanta, you mean?
Yeah. Well, just even when we work together, right? Like we didn't work all day together, right? I might see you once a day in a meeting or something. But you are very, aware of and disciplined and kind of like brief with your time, right? Like you won't, you know, I'll sit there and like shoot the shit with somebody about something work related, but then it turns into like a bunch of stuff it doesn't need to turn into. And you're very like focused and disciplined and you kind of do the thing and then you move on, you know? And there's not a lot of context that ends up in there, just to use the word, a word we use a lot lately with me. So, but I also have like my whole life, I've been kind of obsessed with productivity and, you know, time management hacks. I've paid, I don't know how much money to like kind of different online courses and, you know, attended different seminars and read all the books. And, you know, what brought this topic, the idea of Parkinson's Law, back up to me recently was, as you all know, or likely know, I have recently retired. And I went from working, and even before I retired, I shifted to a 4-day work week, which was a big shift for me. And I, you know, I've made these shifts from working really, really long, demanding hours to shifting to 4 days and then shifting to no days, right? And I, even in my, you know, I'm not like settled into early retirement, I would say. You know, I retired a few months ago, but how do you remember? How many, what? I don't even know,
like May 6th,
something like that. So you know, May, June, July. Okay, yeah, it's been like 3 months, and but a big chunk of that we were traveling. Before that, it was like the end of school. We were prepping for travel, and so I've basically been back 2 weeks now. So I've only had a couple weeks under my belt. But my biggest observation is, I am not sure how I used to fit a demanding full-time job into my life. Weeks, a couple months into it. And I can relate to other times in my life when I've had those feelings where I'm like, how did I do all this other stuff before? Like all of a sudden I'm less productive. And, you know, I can think back to times in my life where like before I had kids versus when I had kids, I'm like, I don't know, you know, now that I have kids, I'm like, I don't know how I thought I was so busy when I didn't have kids, right? And when I remember being in business school while I was working, like doing it on nights and weekends, and I remember thinking, well, oh, when I'm done with, like, I don't know how I, you know, what I was doing with all my time before. And then when I'm done with it, thinking, oh, I'm going to have all this free time. But it's not like, you know, 2 weeks after business school ended, it's not like I had all this free time. I didn't feel like I had all this free time. And the answer to that feeling I'm having where I'm like, where is my time going? How did I do all this stuff before? Is what Parkinson's Law is.
Do you know his full name?
I did, because I was reading about him, but I can't remember it. What is it?
C. Northcott Parkinson.
What a name.
I know. Northcott. Isn't it a great name?
And what is C? Is that his first name? Northcott's his middle name?
Yeah. Probably like Charles.
To know what that C stood
Chucky.
For. Yeah. But he like led with the... Northcott was more important than the C. I like it. If I had a middle name like Northcott, I'd be like M. Northcott Tucker. Just call me Northcott from now on, actually. Okay, tell us what Parkinson's Law is.
So Parkinson's Law, very simply, is that your task will expand to the time allotted. So if you give yourself a week to do something, it will take you a week to finish it. If you give something 2 hours, it will take 2 hours. So even though the task could be completed in 30 minutes instead of 2 hours, or a day instead of 7 days, it's always going to fill up the time, and you're always going to be kind of pushing up against the limits of your available time in order to get everything done.
Yeah. So a good example is when I shifted to a 4-day work week, and to be clear, I wasn't like doing more hours in those 4 days, right? I used to essentially on paper, you get paid for a 40-hour work week. Not that that's what anybody works. I shifted to a 32-hour work week, and I don't feel like I did any less work in the end. I feel like I actually was just way more efficient with how I spent my time and more disciplined and all, you know, all the things we were talking about in the beginning, Mike, that you are. And I feel like I got the same amount of work done. And there's a lot of countries that have looked at moving to a shorter work week for that same reason, is actually it will make everybody happier, and they'll actually have arguably a higher work output because of Parkinson's law, right? It's that idea that, you know, if you tell me I have to spend 8 hours a day looking busy in the office, I'll do it and I'll get some stuff done. But if I have something really important going on and I need to get those same tasks done in a 2 to 3 hour time slot at home, all of a sudden I'm way more efficient and effective. Like I'm capable of doing it. But because of Parkinson's law, I will allow those 2 to 3 hours of work to expand into an 8 hour day because that's what is available to me.
And I see this quite frequently in my corporate job, because I am constantly being presented with requests to like hire new people, create new teams. And the justification is, well, we're overwhelmed. We need this person or this new team to do all this work. And my response is always like, this is not going to solve your problem. If you hire somebody, they are within a month going to be working 60 hours a week and they're going to be overwhelmed. And then you're going to need another person. And so constantly chasing the tasks with increased capacity or increased time does not solve your problem. You are always up against Parkinson's law. You will always need more people in an organization. And by the way, if you were to like cut 50% of that organization, all the work would get done in the same way, perhaps even better.
Yeah. You would be, that's a great kind of reference, because I remember that a lot. And I often remember being challenged, you know, when I was asking for more people, being challenged to say, well, how would you do things if you couldn't add more people? Or if you had to do it with, you know, when we were having different kind of cost-cutting exercises, what would it look like if we had to cut 10% of the team, right? How would we do things differently? And so it makes you take a different approach psychologically and mindset to how you get your work done, and think of ways to do things more efficiently and effectively. But sort of, you know, the theory of Parkinson's law, to me, if you know what procrastination is, which we all know what procrastination is, I think, then basically you're already familiar with Parkinson's law, right? You maybe just didn't know the term or the theory of Parkinson's law, or who C. Northcott Parkinson was. But you're familiar with it because it is procrastination, right? If we're given 2 weeks to complete a task, we often wait, we think about it for 2 weeks, and we mull over it, and we, you know, stress about it, and like, oh, when are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? But then in the end, we end up like pumping it out in 3 hours, you know, in the last day or two before it's actually due. And in the end, if someone had given us a deadline for a half a day and said, hey, I need this thing tomorrow, we would have been like, oh my God, I can't do this thing tomorrow. But you can, right? So we'll get into this more. But that is the theory of it. And that is, for those that are making the connections, that is why I was trying to think of how to refer to myself. That is why I have many things on my plate right now, but I don't have the full-time job that I had 3 months ago. And I'm feeling really busy and in a way like less productive and less effective than I used to be. And it's because all of a sudden I have all this time and I'm not managing it well. And I'm not kind of, I don't even know what we'll get into in a minute, but
So Maggie, I would like to read to you a couple passages from a book. The book is 4,000
Weeks.
4,000 Weeks.
Loved it.
Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. And there are really only a few books that I would consider just like life-changing or enlightening, especially for the topics which I already feel like I kind of live my life according to. 4,000 Weeks is one of them. Essentialism is another. But there is a passage in this book that I think speaks to your situation. I'd like to read it to you and to everybody listening. The reason isn't that you haven't yet discovered the right time management tricks or applied sufficient effort, or that you need to start getting up earlier, or that you're generally useless. It's that the underlying assumption is unwarranted. There's no reason to believe you'll ever feel on top of things, in quotations, or make time for everything that matters simply by getting more done. But the other exasperating issue is that if you succeed in fitting more in, you'll find the goalposts start to shift. More things will begin to seem important, meaningful, or obligatory, acquire a reputation for doing your work in amazing speed, and you'll be given more of it. And I think this is something that was very much you.
Yeah, this is my affliction.
In the company, because you were incredibly enthusiastic, engaged in your work, delivered things quickly and with a high level of quality, and therefore got bombarded with everything, even if it wasn't really your job.
Yeah, extracurricular, yeah, everything.
Because they knew you were going to do a good job and you wanted to please them, you wanted to succeed, you wanted to do that. So continuing in this passage, figure out how to spend enough time with your kids and at the office so you don't feel guilty about either, and you'll suddenly feel some new social pressure to spend more time exercising or to join that parent-teacher association. Oh, and isn't it finally time you learn to meditate? Get around to launching that side business you've dreamed of for years, and if it succeeds, it won't be long before you're no longer satisfied with keeping it small. And I think this is pretty reflective of your current situation. Would you agree, Maggie?
Yeah, very much so. I actually read 4,000 Weeks or listened to it maybe 6 months ago, and I really want to re-listen to it now. I think it would have a different influence on me.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing. I would highly recommend everybody read it, because it was not just about time management. It is really, in my view, like a book about the existential meaning of your life and how to manage the time of your life, not just about how to get the tasks done.
Yeah, it was like a lot of time management books in the kind of olden days, or like old school ones, were all about like getting more done faster, mm-hmm. whatever. And some of the like newer era of time management books, like 4,000 Weeks, are more about a mindset shift about how you spend your time. And then, you know, when you are working, how you spend that time more efficiently and effectively.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, more, 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 get more done, be more productive, be a machine. And so, hey, 4,000 Weeks, we'll put a link in the show notes to it. But also just a reminder, you can get it for free at your public library. You can get it as an audiobook for free on Libby. You can get it through Libby as a like Kindle book to read, or an ebook. And so it will not cost you any money to listen to it.
All right, so let's transition to what we can learn from Parkinson's Law as it relates to our time. And we'll get to money in a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing that is most important to me that I kind of framed up by way of this book is that you need to recognize that the goalposts are always moving. And it's either by you, because you want to do more, or it's by others, you are being asked to do more. And so getting more done won't make you feel on top of it, as the author says. And I think that is a key point to take away from Parkinson's Law.
Yeah, it's interesting because my goalposts are moving in a different direction right now, a direction they've never moved in, like a backwards direction almost. And I'm super happy with my decision, to be clear. I'm in the right spot. But this is all the stuff people warned me about, of like you kind of go through a funky time as you leave, you know, just make a huge life transition from, I've spent the last 20 years in a grind of corporate America, and I now don't have that as to set my goalposts for me, right? All the posts are self-set and for different things now, and they're moving, and I'm still kind of figuring out why and where. And anyways, okay. Another lesson you can take from Parkinson's Law applied to your time is to set shorter deadlines. This is one of the biggest takeaways from this kind of theory is, you know, you will, when you give yourself 2 weeks to do something that actually takes a half a day, you will let it expand, right? Now, if you set a self-imposed deadline and set it and respect it, it is amazing what you can do when you're really focused and you kind of create this shorter deadline. And so, you know, an example would be, you know, when you do not give yourself a deadline for something, you feel like you have all the time in the world. And so you just kind of keep moving it from, and that's how I feel right now is, right? There's a lot of things where I have to give my own deadlines on things, because otherwise I'm like, well, you know, I could take the next 6 months to transfer my 401k while I continue to incur higher fees, you know, with the company that it's sitting at now, versus now I can move it into my own brokerage. And so versus if I'm like, I'm going to transfer this, you know, today or by the end of the week or whatever it is, giving yourself these shorter deadlines that you, even if your work sets a deadline for you that's longer, you can still set your own deadline for it. And then you're not going to waste time and energy worrying about that, stressing about it. You're going to get creative about how to get that thing done efficiently and effectively, and you're going to be more focused. Along those same lines, one technique that we've actually talked about on the show before is called the Pomodoro technique, which is very effective for many people. It's the idea of kind of time boxing your work. So this particular one is a method that breaks down your work breaks kind of your working style into 30-minute chunks, where 25 minutes of it is for you to spend on focused work, and then you get a 5-minute break in between. And by time boxing, you're much more focused during those 25 minutes because you know you're going to get a break at the end. And that is an approach where you can use it to put limits on the various work and activities that you need to do. And you also want to be realistic. So this is kind of a silly example, but it's a real example that pulls together the shorter deadlines and the time boxing your work. So I have been creating some reels on Instagram. I kind of like doing it. Like, I like doing videos. I like creative stuff. And I found myself doing longer reels that took, they're just tedious to create and they take a while. And you could spend 2 hours making a reel. I maybe have once or twice. And you're just trying to perfect something, whatever it is. But I then got so annoyed at the amount of time I was spending with myself that I was like, I could do these much easier. I can do shorter ones. I can not put as much copy on them. There's a ton of things I can do to make them just as effective and get just as many impressions and just as helpful to people, but not spend 2 hours. And as soon as I shifted my mindset to say, I'm not going to allow myself to spend 2 hours making a reel or spend an hour making a reel. I'm going to give myself 15 minutes. And if I can get one done in 15 minutes, then great. I'm going to pump one out. And if I can't, then I'm not going to make it. I'm just not going to do it. Right. And that's an example that is maybe not applicable to everybody, but hopefully there's some transferable learnings from that example.
Now, Maggie, what you've been describing is about deadlines and how to kind of trick your brain into thinking, into being more effective.
Yeah.
Now, the other part of this, and the one that really applies for me, because I don't think I'm not a big procrastinator. That's not like the issue for me. The other part of managing Parkinson's law is along the lines of like working smarter and not harder. And so if you think of that metaphor of the big rocks, small rocks, and the sand, and how you manage your time to do all your tasks, like taking care of big tasks and letting little stuff fill in the space is a way of doing this. And one of the things that I think has impacted me or created the way I am is that, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is that I never had like an hourly job growing or, you know, until I was, you know, close to 30 after business school, where I was just like, I had to be somewhere all the time, regardless of if I was doing work. So I never like worked in a restaurant. I never worked in a retail store. So everything I did was entrepreneurial in nature. It was based on outputs. And if I found a more efficient way of doing it, then I would just go do other stuff. And it, like, the task was accomplished. And I think that trained me to always like try to find shortcuts, like in the best sense of the term, and try to work smarter, not just like be somewhere for a long period of time. Do you think that your work history has impacted the way that you manage your time like this?
It's such an interesting example you just gave. I never thought about it in that way. First off, growing up, I had tons of hourly jobs up until I, you know, got out of college, essentially. I wouldn't necessarily say my work history has impacted it, because what I would more say is the insight I took out of what you just said, which is so fascinating, Mike, is that when you kind of talked about like you've had a more entrepreneurial approach to things, when you figured out how to do that thing that used to take 2 hours and 1 hour, you kept the extra hour, right?
That's right. I didn't do two of those things.
Yes, yes. So I, like in the example you were giving of kind of knowing me from work, I would figure out how to do something better, which I love doing. I had a good reputation for finding like better ways to do things. But then I would just give that time back because I was on the, you know, I was working for a company. It was their time essentially, right? And so, and I didn't, and this was my own like bad work habits of, I didn't find, and I kind of got better at this as I had kids and had more demands outside of work, but I didn't take that newfound time I created and use it for my own good. I put more of myself back into the company, which is a bad work habit. And I'm not even like touting like, oh, I was so great. I gave everything back to my company. Like I'm kind of knocking myself for that, right? Like I worked smarter and I worked harder, right? And and I see people like you where you worked smarter, not harder. And I don't even mean that as a critical thing.
I take it as a compliment.
It's not as a criticism, right? Like, you had way more free time than I had. You were way more relaxed at work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I do think there's just a fascinating insight in there of as you, and then there's a really interesting comparison to money also, right? Of like, you know, which we'll make in a minute, but like, as you have more of that, as you create that extra time because you are becoming more effective, use that time for good on the stuff that you want to use it on, which is, might be like self-care and time with your family and, you know, all of this other stuff, not always more work, which is, that is kind of what I was trying to say I loved about 4,000 weeks is it wasn't all about, you know, more work, more work, more work. It was about a quality of life.
So to kind of close out this thought and bring it back to that big rocks, little rocks, sand metaphor, what I would say is that if you found a way to put all the big rocks and a few of the small rocks into the jar, stop putting shit in there. You know, don't fill it up with sand. Don't put more rocks in there. Like, stuff will come up and you will need that space in order to do it. But don't try to find the most efficient way to fill up 100% of your time, because then you will have 110% of your time committed and you will have, you'll be overwhelmed.
This is my issue, is I just keep putting more rocks in the jar. Big rocks, little rocks, sand, all the sizes, you know, and I have a problem. Okay. So to segue that too is, remember that you still control your time. You may not feel like it all the time, especially if you work for another person or another company. But you do choose how you respond to things, and you choose how effective you are with your time, and you choose what you do with that extra time if you become more effective, like we were just saying. And like Mike said, stuff will come up that you don't anticipate. So create that margin in your life so that you can enjoy what then, you know, comes your way, where you can make choices about how you want to fill that margin and how you're able to use your time. And then, you know, the last closing point on this is just understanding this concept is part of the learning in itself, right? So we just gave some tips for how you actually, you know, kind of take the theory of Parkinson's Law and actually use it to help your time management and to improve how you do things. But really just understanding the concept is the first step to kind of adjusting our habits and our work practices. So I want to shift this to money, because that's what our podcast is about.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I feel like there's two just quick examples from some people that we follow and like a lot that are in this space that are just really fascinating to me, that are reinforcing these points.
Okay.
And different spins on it. Okay. So one is Rich and Regular, who we've had on the show before, and who used to work at the company that Mike and I, it feels weird for me to say now that I worked at and that Mike works at. So they did a whole series, like they did a podcast and a blog post and a bunch of social stuff on this topic of the overemployed and this really fascinating trend of people who, I think maybe pre-COVID, but also it happened more during COVID when we all went remote, that basically had two jobs, often secretly. Like they literally imagine that, like, you know, I work for one company remote and then I also take another full-time job for another company remote. And neither company knows that I'm able to get these two, you know, quote, full-time jobs done maybe not in 40 hours a week, but maybe in 50 hours a week, right? They're paying me for 40 hours in theory, and I'm able to do the job in 24 hours, 25 hours, whatever. It was fascinating to me because it is, that is Parkinson's law, right? Like, you could have pretended to do that job in 40 hours a week and shown up at work and sat there and looked busy, or you could cut out all the fluff, get super, super disciplined about how you spend your time and get that same job done in 25 hours a week and get paid to do two different jobs.
That's awesome.
It was just like a fast, I had never thought about it. It hadn't even crossed my mind. I mean, it crossed my mind to have multiple jobs, but not like remote at this, where basically like I'm doing the same, two of the same jobs at the same time and just kind of juggling them. And the other thing is, the other interesting application that I had not even thought about is, but I love 5 a.m. Joel, Joel O'Leary, we've had him on the show a couple times now. So he has a whole blog post. We'll put a link in the show notes to it, where he actually leverages the theory of Parkinson's law to think about the length of our careers. And so this one's particularly, you know, fascinating to me right now. So he, in his article, he says careers are supposed to be 40 years long. So we allow them to be 40 years long. If we truly believe that time is 100% within our control, we can choose how long we want our career to be. I love this concept because I'm, you know, selfishly, like I think about my own situation and I'm like, I had a very nice, successful, hardworking 20-year career and I saved during it so that I didn't have to have a 40-year career. And it's the same theory, and it's a good kind of segue to shifting to the money topic also, because how I treated those 20 years time-wise and financially is what, you know, led me to be able to early retire. But his point, I just love how he's kind of applied it to the world of FIRE and early retirement in the sense of, you know, our mindset is that your career is just supposed to be like your whole adult working life. And so we drag it out to become our whole adult working life. But actually, we could squeeze it into a shorter time period if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love everything Joel says.
Yes.
All right, so let's transition to money. And the same principle applies that your spending will expand to fill the amount of money you have available. And so in the same way that people think that free time is wasted and they should fill all of their time with something quote unquote productive, many people think that excess money is wasted because they don't have like a sense of delayed gratification. They aren't thinking about the future. They're thinking, I have $1,000 left over from my paycheck. I should absolutely spend it. What the hell else am I going to do with it?
And if ultimately, like if we have more money, we are more likely to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what we talk about a lot, lifestyle inflation, keeping up with the Joneses. It's a lot easier to keep up with the Joneses if you technically have that amount of money available, right? And so this is why I, you know, I love the kind of segue between applying Parkinson's law to our time and then to our money. And even the point Joel is making of, you know, having these, you know, thinking our career has to be 40 years, but actually, what if it were 20 years? For it to be 20 years, we've got to think about our money differently and not allow our money to expand, not allow our spending to expand to fill the full amount of money we technically have available.
Yeah.
Had I done that, it's funny that I'm not as great with my time, but I'm actually pretty good with my money. Had I done that, I wouldn't have retired 3 months ago. I would be driving a Tesla. I would live in a bigger house. I'd still be working a demanding job. And I would not be as happy as I am today.
Well, I'm glad you made the decision you did then.
I agree. And thank you for your role in that, if I don't pat you on the back enough for it. So how do we apply Parkinson's law to improve our finances? Just like we were talking about using it to improve our time.
One kind of bridge between time and money is that when you have less time, you will spend more money. You are either outsourcing work because you feel like you don't have the time, or you are paying for things to increase the efficiency or buy yourself back a little bit of time. And so if you get better with managing your time, I can almost guarantee that you're going to become better with your money.
There's an interesting relationship between the two. And then also, when you constrict the amount of money you have, just like time, you will realize that you can get by on so much less and still be happy.
And this is something, financially speaking, that I have always loved doing. So our next tip is really about hiding the money from yourself And I see it as a game. I realize this is a very privileged way of looking at money because many people are not in a position to hide their excess money. They just don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you are lucky enough to have a lot of money, you can defer your income if you have that available. You can pay off your mortgage or invest in real estate. You can pack away money into retirement accounts, or you can do what I do and I move all my excess money into my brokerage account and then invest it. So what is left over in my checking account is very little money. And so I am effectively living paycheck to paycheck. And even though I know my net worth and I have these charts and I see it, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I better not do that. I really don't have a lot of money. And it is an effective psychological tool that can help you become better at this.
Yeah, it's an effective psychological tool. It's also an effective financial tool because like deferring compensation and even real estate and other things, there's actually a lot of penalties if you change your mind, right? So when I defer my compensation, I don't have a choice. I can't, it's just like putting money in your 401k. I can't get to it without a huge penalty. I don't even think I can get to my DCP money at all.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Let alone with a penalty. 401k I could get to with a penalty. Real estate, you could get to with a penalty in the sense that you've got to sell something before it appreciated. If you're having all these closing costs and other things in short periods of time, it just wasn't worth the deal in the first place. And so it is this idea of kind of hiding your money from yourself. And Mike, you were good to just point out, you know, there's a ton of privilege that comes with even being in a position to be able to do that. And another thing that we talk about a ton is just avoiding lifestyle inflation. So we did a whole recent episode on this. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. But in addition to hiding money, just recognizing that you don't need to keep up with the Joneses and you are avoiding inflating your lifestyle as you start to make more money is one of the biggest ways that you can improve your finances and leverage the theory of Parkinson's Law to help you do that.
And like that passage I read from the book earlier, lifestyle inflation is continually moving the goalposts of what you think is going to make you happy. So stop moving them. Find something that you know makes you happy and then stick with it. Because if you are constantly chasing and constantly saying, if I have this, if I go buy this, I will be happy, you're never going to be happy. And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Another very practical item is set a budget and stick to it, right? So to similar to kind of hiding your money and like paying yourself first and getting rid of it so you don't have access to it. For the money you do have access to, setting budget categories, setting a budget at a higher category, like your annual spending or at a like, this is how much I can spend a month on groceries. It's the same thing as setting a deadline on yourself and time boxing how you spend your time, right? It's the money equivalent of that. And it can be really helpful for lots of people. I mean, a ton of people get out of debt and improve their finances through setting budgets and then sticking to those budgets and having, you know, an accountability partner in your, you know, partner, spouse, et cetera, to help you do that.
And lastly, practice delayed gratification. Eventually, you can spend the money on something, but you first have to pay yourself. You have to be within your budget. You have to do all those things that we previously discussed.
I am a big fan of delayed gratification. That is what early retirement is in many ways, right? We've been pretending that we have less than we do for a decade so that we can enjoy the next decade. We're delaying that gratification.
All right, Maggie, this was fun. Let's do our top three takeaways.
Yeah, sure. So number one is understanding Parkinson's Law will add value to your life. No one is immune to it until you really understand what it is and find your own ways to personally overcome it.
Number two, it applies to your time and your money in very similar ways.
Number three, think about what you can do to commit overcoming this concept of Parkinson's Law with your time and your money and start forming those habits. So make some commitments today of what you want to do differently.
So thanks everybody for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we would love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.
All right. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.